People say all the time you need to scale your real estate business, but what does that actually mean and how do you actually do that? We're going to talk about it today. Stay tuned. This episode of Keeping It Real is brought to you by Real Geeks. How many homes are you going to sell this year? Do you have the right tools? Is your website turning soft leads into interested buyers? Are you spending money on leads that aren't converting? Well, Real Geeks is your solution. Find out why agents across the country choose Real Geeks as their technology partner. Real Geeks was created by an agent for agents. They pride themselves on delivering a sales and marketing solution so that you can easily generate more business. Their agent websites are fast and built for lead conversion with a smooth search experience for your visitors. Real Geeks also includes an easy-to-use agent CRM. So once a lead signs up on your website, you can track their interest and have great follow-up conversations. Real Geeks is loaded with a ton of marketing tools to nurture your leads and increase brand awareness. Visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod and find out why realtors come to Real Geeks to generate more business. Again, visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod. And now, onto our show. Amid recent class action lawsuits, there is uncertainty among agents on how they are going to secure their professional fees when representing buyers. Kaplan Real Estate Education is proud to present the new Buyer Agency Professional Course. Learn the responsibilities of a buyer agent, how to create a compelling buyer agent value proposition, how to market your unique value proposition, and more in this professional development course. Plus, upon completing the course, you'll be eligible to obtain the BAP designation digital badge. Learn more at kapre.com. That's kapre.com, or visit the link in the show notes. And now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the largest podcast made by real estate agents and for real estate agents. My name is DJ Paris. I'm your guide and host through the show. And in just a moment, we're going to be speaking with author and top producer Nadira Taylor. Before we get to Nadira, just a quick announcement. We are decided that we are going to be increasing the number of episodes we do per month. So it's very exciting. This is, I think, our sixth or seventh year doing the show, and we want to give you guys more content. So there's going to be more episodes done on a monthly basis. So we hope that you appreciate that and find them of value. Best way you can help us is to tell a friend. Think of another realtor that doesn't listen to our show or maybe just hasn't heard of us and shoot them a link or send them over to our website, keepingitrealpod.com, and ask them to subscribe. We would appreciate it. All right, let's get to the main event. My conversation with Nadira Taylor. Today, our guest is Nadira Taylor with Diamond Mine Real Estate in New York City. Let me tell you more about Nadira. Now, with over 22 years of experience in the real estate industry, Nadira Taylor has distinguished herself by her local expertise in the home buying process and her dedication to fostering job creation and generational wealth. As a mentor in the BNYC mentorship program and author of the book Dream Catch Hustle, Nadira is a pivotal figure in New York's business community. She is committed to making a lasting impact through her work at Diamond Mine, her real estate firm, which is a minority-owned real estate brokerage revolutionizing housing solutions for families and individuals across New York, a desperately needed niche. I also would like everybody to purchased Nadira's book. You can find this on Amazon. We will have a link to this in the show notes. The name of the book is, as I said earlier, but I'll give you the full title, Dream Catch Hustle, How to Flawlessly Scale Your Business Without Missing a Step. And remember, everyone who's listening, you are running a business. So this is a great opportunity to work on your business as opposed to working in your business. And I also, before we bring Nadira on, I always forget to say this until the end, so I'm going to say it at the beginning. Her firm, Diamond Mine, is always looking or currently looking for some additional agents. And if you are an agent and you want to service at New York City, and you think maybe your brokerage isn't giving you everything that you need, please reach out. We will have all of their contact information in our show notes. Nadira, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to chat with you. This is the first time that we've really talked about, you know, it's funny, we have a lot of agents on here, top 1% producers who focus on like luxury properties. And we've had people who sell these mega mansions, you know, 50 million and above. And, you know, a lot of times affordable housing doesn't really get the press that it deserves. People love the big, beautiful, you know, gorgeous estates that none of us can afford and seeing, you know, who are these people that are buying these crazy properties. But in the real world here, the rest of us are dealing with, you know, regular, you know, consumers and people who, you know, maybe are, you know, saving up for their first home or not even aware that they could. I know I certainly wasn't even aware that I could buy a condo when I did. I didn't know that. I had to Google it. This is about 20 some years ago, but I had to actually go, am I able? Like, I didn't even know how a mortgage works. And I suspect a lot of people are probably in that same camp. So what you do is really, really cool. So I'm excited to learn more about how you service those clients. And I know you service all sorts of clients as well. But before we get to that, I'd love to know a little bit about your background. So tell us how you got started in real estate.
Sure. So I began real estate in like 2001. I went to school for computers and I worked at one of the larger firms, Rose Associates in New York City, in the computer department. And I definitely knew that I was going to transfer departments when back then you took apart a computer and you had to put it back together, put the memory in and all that stuff in order for it to work. And my boss says to me, so why do you have so many parts left over? So from there, I just moved on to the construction department and everything just pretty much took a life of its own, from compliance to property management to starting my own firm in my house. From there, we went to a storefront, and now we have a multifaceted real estate office, including sales, property management, and also construction.
Wow. Well, and then tell us, so as you began, and when did you start your brokerage?
In 2016, out of my house.
Wow. Wow. And well, 2016, so that's, you've been doing this a little less than 10 years. So we've crossed over the 10-year mark here at our firm, so I can appreciate where you might be right now. You're probably wearing a lot of different hats. And I'm excited to really, you know, because what you've done is really, you've done a lot of focus on entrepreneurship for yourself and your brokerage. But I really want to first talk about this affordable housing sort of problem and what you're doing to help solve for that, because this is something that many, many major markets and minor markets in the country are experiencing. I know here in Chicago, this is a big area of concern for us. Also with the NAR lawsuit and changes to buyer compensation, we know that this may make it, well, it not may, it will make it more challenging for first-time home buyers potentially, unless there's some creative solutions in how to, you know, how to move forward there. So would love to talk, let's talk about affordable housing for home buyers. Tell us about that.
Sure. So when it comes to affordable housing, everyone thinks that is primarily for low to moderate income families. However, higher income families do fall under affordable housing as well. And the reason why is because you know that we cannot violate fair housing laws. So everyone is able to get affordable housing, so to speak. But when it comes to that, my goal was to make sure that everyone was able to get a house. And if they didn't get a house, it was because they could, you know, they just didn't want to, not because they couldn't, right?
Right.
And there are so many different initiatives out there. So for instance, when I purchased my house 13 years ago, and I live in Long Island, Nassau County, with some of the highest taxes in America, and my interest rate is only 1.625%.
Oh,
yes. I purchased through the NACA program. And this particular program pays your closing costs, your attorney fees, and your appraisal fees. Do you need to? Yes, it does.
What you can't see is my mouth just dropped open because I was so thrilled. I'm like, wait, this is amazing. So, yeah, so she was just responding to my jaw literally dropping.
So, but even with this, so we all know that you cannot purchase real property without having any funds. So, yes, you do need to have savings. However, with different affordable housing initiatives, you either do not need to have as much savings. There are programs geared towards lowering your interest rate. And now that NACA has pretty much came out like maybe 20 years ago, so many other lenders have tapped into the CRA programs. What a lot of people don't know is that you can get a lower interest rate just by banking with the lender. You can get even another quarter of a percent lower just by doing automatic, auto pay. There's other banks. I just encountered M&T Bank, who has a program that if you do the biweekly payment, you automatically qualify for lower interest rates every time they lower. And it'll only cost you an additional $250 every time they lower the interest rate. You know, so there's so many different programs. Just do not accept what your lender gives you. Call them up and say, hey, listen, what are you offering me? Exactly. If I go with you, what is it exactly that you're giving me? Because there's so many banks out there. You're not the only bank. Definitely try different credit unions. You know, there's so many different things. And nowadays, banks even take susus as a form of savings.
Right.
You know, so there's so many ways to skin a cat and so many ways to definitely get a house.
While you were talking, I just quickly Googled NACA because I felt like, oh, maybe I should know what that is. And I had not heard of NACA before, but as you were talking, even their 30-year jumbo rate is pretty attractive. Their traditional products are pretty attractive, but I know they have all sorts of other products to assist other types of buyers. So you are absolutely right. It is, you know, we are oftentimes caught up in here are the lenders I know, I'm going to reach out to them. And a lot of them really have very similar products across the board. Right. But when you do get into these more creative sort of financing solutions, it's a whole other world out there of other opportunities. And this NACA is amazing. It's actually, they've helped over 500,000 home buyers. So they are not
400 alone in New York amazing. Over the last few years.
Wow. Wow. I am so glad you told us about this. So just a little shout out to NACA. If you go to NACA.com, NACA.com, you can learn more about some of their different programs. So one piece is, of course, having a product to give or provide to somebody who's wanting home ownership and maybe, you know, isn't going the more traditional route of just getting a 30-year fixed, or maybe they still can or will. But boy, I'd sure love to have a 1.65% rate. I have a 2.9%. I thought that was great. I'm getting screwed. I'm teasing.
Well, I've actually helped people who had enough funds to buy their interest rate all the way down to 0.025%.
Oh, I should have called you before I bought my condo. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, first, of course, is doing the homework. So you had mentioned some great ideas, credit unions. Credit unions are great too. I end up about every 6 months, I go on like NerdWallet or any of these sites that literally list like the best savings rate or best money market rate of the month. Right. And what's great is it's always credit unions, and it's always usually about, you know, 50 basis points to a 1% better. So a lot of times I just move cash around a little bit from bank to bank. And a lot of times there's these credit unions who just give these unbelievable deals that traditional, you know, the big banks just can't do. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that. So another question is, you know, once you've secured sort of the product that could work for some of these consumers, then how do you go about educating them, and how do you find the consumer too? Because I imagine a lot of it's an education process, is telling people who might not even know, like I was saying, I was at one point, that they could in fact purchase. How do you begin that process, and how do you find those people?
Well, I do hold seminars at my local church. I'm on YouTube explaining to people, and I'm just pretty much shouting it from like the rooftops and everything else. And just by word of mouth, if I'm somewhere networking, I let everyone know. And right now, Diamond Mine is pretty much known for helping individuals and families purchase through affordable programs. So it's definitely by word of mouth. But what we like to do here and what I've done to make us so unique is that I've learned the underwriting process. And that's with NACA. If there is a bank that's offering any type of affordability process, I will badger whoever the lender is. And, you know, I'll ask for certain documents. I'm really good with math. And I'll back out whatever formula is they're using to see exactly how they're qualifying people. So that this way, when I'm doing the seminars and I'm speaking to people, I can pretty much pinpoint which program would work best for them and exactly what they should do and how they should save and how they should pretty much live their life over the next couple of months to a year to make sure that they qualify for these programs as well.
That's incredible because you're really sort of in a way cutting out, in a good way, the communication string between the consumer and the lender when you are, I mean, of course they are going to have communication, but that initial thing of like, I think I know what might be a good option for you, being that you've really dug in and learned the products and also understood the underwriting process is really great because you can see things before it gets sent off to the lender. And the lender's like, oh, this isn't going to work, or we're missing this or this, or this isn't the right product for so-and-so. You already know all of that. So in a way, what you're doing is really quite brilliant because these people are at your seminar, whether they're virtual or in person, they're raising their hand going, I'm interested. And not only are you like, great, I'm going to connect you with my lender. You're like, let's talk about it right now. And let's figure out what would be really, I mean, if you think about it, that's an amazing thing. It's kind of like walking into an open house and going, well, I don't think this is the right fit. And the agent going, let's sit down for 10 minutes. I'm going to find you five other places. And, right. And you know, most of the time agents can't really do that in an open house. You're basically doing a version of that during your seminars, which I actually think is brilliant because it eliminates the possibility of miscommunication or waiting on somebody to, oh, you got to get the forms over to so-and-so. I mean, they're going to do that down the road, but you're going to really be able to guide them. And I have a question about affordable housing. So we know there are tens of thousands of realtors in the New York City area and the surrounding boroughs and surrounding counties, including Long Island. How many, is it a very small percentage of agents that even understand in your local market what these programs are and how they can actually impact buyers?
Yes, they do. So right now, you know, we still have a lot of agents who there's more buyers than there are agents. And the agent's main goal is to get the buyer into a house, but usually they come with their own lending. Right. I do make it my business and I did hire a director of sales. So that this way, what we do is we try to conquer like every, you know, every bank. We have relationships with everyone. If there's something that we haven't heard of before we even start shopping, let me speak to your lender, you know, and that's something that agents should do so that this way they are one abreast of what's out there. And then two, figure like how is the contract structured? You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
In New York City, we have HPD grant where someone can get up to $100,000, which is great. If you can actually get through to them. So we have a good relationship with HPD. However, the contract needs to be structured that this isn't a 30 to 45 day closing now. You know, right. You have to wait for the grant to be funded. This sure. is now a 90 to maybe 120 day closing. And you want to be upfront about that so that this way you won't lose the house.
Right.
You know, so it's just, I do believe that agents, especially in New York City, because New York is a high cost area, even if you just find one program, get a relationship, learn what the program entails. What is it exactly that your client would need and who qualifies for this program? You know, so that this way you're able to help at least maybe 10 more people that you wasn't able to help previously. But in New York, everyone and, you know, Instagram makes everyone love the glitter and the glam. But there are also affordable houses out there that still has glitter and glam.
Right. Yeah. What we're not talking about necessarily are non-desirable properties. We're not talking about that. We are just talking about creative ways that first-time home buyers might qualify for various programs that they don't know exist so that they can buy the home that they actually want. I want to thank you for saying that. I want to make sure we're not necessarily talking about low quality housing or low income housing, although certainly that could be the case. But this idea of really it's so smart for you, I think, to have this knowledge, because again, most agents aren't playing in this space. I imagine a lot of organizations where people may be coming to them saying, you know, I want to buy a home, and maybe it's some sort of community organization that's providing assistance or guidance about how to do that. I imagine you've probably built up a nice reputation in the New York City area. You probably get a lot of inbound phone calls, I'm guessing, from people that say, hey, I've got somebody who is interested in this sort of thing. You know, you talked about building relationships with other partners. Has that been a real key to your success, as well as connecting with these groups that work with those types of consumers?
Yes. Yeah, so not just other groups or organizations, but also other realtors. I get text messages all the time from, especially this one particular gentleman. He's like, listen, I have a knocker deal. Is this from your office? You know, and I say, no, that one's not mine. Well, I'm not taking it because you're the only one who understands it. You know, and I also get a lot of referrals in as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, once you've developed a relationship with your client as an agent, you do want them to get a house, and not everyone can afford to go the traditional way. So sure. I get a lot of phone calls from other agents as well that says, hey, you know what? Can you or someone on your team assist this person? They really need a house, you know, lovely people. Can you just help them? Because I can't, you know, so it's relationships all throughout.
Yeah, it's really, really smart. And I've always thought that I've always witnessed, and I've noticed this here in our own market, as well as all the people I've interviewed, is they usually pick a niche. It's not that they don't do other things. Of course, you know, if an opportunity comes up that they want to pursue that's outside of their scope, they may or may not do it. But when it comes to really highly specialized information like what you have, it is a very small playing field, I imagine. So there probably just aren't many agents who have the knowledge you have. And it's something that at one point you didn't have either. You learned it, and you've crafted not only a nice niche for yourself, but a brokerage. And I'll tell you, I'll pull back the curtain slightly. I was talking to Nadir just before he went on, and I said, hey, are you guys looking for more agents? I'm going to make sure to promote that. And she goes, oh, yes, we have a lot of leads. And so I was very, very excited to hear that, because how many brokerages are saying that right now? Well, here in Chicago, I can tell you almost zero of them. So, you know, this is the idea of becoming a specialist, is all of a sudden you start to develop a reputation, a name for yourself, and you've done hundreds upon hundreds of these transactions. So you and your team really, really know the ins and outs. How did you first learn about sort of creative solutions for first-time home buyers?
When I was a first-time home buyer myself.
Oh, right. Yeah, you mentioned. Yeah, yeah.
My husband and I, we made pretty decent income. However, we were never taught to save. You know, our generation was, you make the money, you spend the money, and there's another paycheck next week.
Yeah.
And we look good on paper, but we really couldn't purchase a home. And I started looking for different ways. I said, you know what? I'm going to get us a house. And that's how I stumbled across NACA. And I really had a horrible time going through the program, but it wasn't until I started helping other people where I realized that I was the problem. I didn't have that much savings. I didn't know how to save. I didn't monitor my credit. There was just so many things that I didn't do. I just knew that I wanted a house. And from there on, I said, well, you know what? I'm going to make sure that no one else that I know falls victim to that. And I just started helping people, like, hey, listen, you have to stay on top of your credit. How much are you saving? Maybe if you take out $100 every time and put in a separate account, you won't even miss it. And initially, that was my goal, because I wanted other people to get a house. And it wasn't until I actually closed on my home, and with that 1.625% interest rate, is when I said, you know what? I want everyone to have a house. Like, no one knows about this program. And I just started opening up my church doors. But it really wasn't a niche at first. It became a passion. I didn't realize that it was a niche until I just sat down. And at that time, I was director of compliance at Thor Equities. And I'm doing rent stabilized housing. And I loved doing that. I was a manager and everything else. And I'm like, you know, this is just who I am. You know, I like helping people either purchase or rent through affordability programs. And that's just something that I'm going to do. And at that time, I was still working. When I decided to become a broker, I read somewhere that because of all the real estate experience that I had, I didn't have to be a sales agent. I could just go straight to being a broker. So I said, oh, wow, this is good. You know, my husband's in the local 79 union. If I sell one house every 3 months, we'll be okay. And what started from my dining room, you know, to, like I said, a storefront and now an office is where we're at now, because I just like helping people.
It's amazing. And I imagine you probably get a few referrals from the local chapter that your husband probably, I imagine, you know, the word gets around there as well. And we have a few guys who are pipe fitters who are licensed realtors with us, and they get all their business from their fellow union workers. And it's like the smartest thing ever. And, you know, so it's really, I love this, that you are bringing this additional knowledge, you know, to people that really need it and are underserved, right? So this is such a huge opportunity, because we think we talk to a buyer or a consumer who wants to purchase, and they go, well, I don't really have much savings. And we're like, okay, well, that's going to be the end of that. And we'll have to wait until you've, you know, increase that pool. And maybe you still will have to wait, but there are other alternatives and options. Like you were saying, if the income's there, a lot of times some of these smaller credit unions or banks who are more nimble can make exceptions and come up with programs that work. Say, hey, these two people make quite a bit of money. Let's figure out how to get them. And whether they make a lot of money or not, there's potential option for them. So what I want to hear about social media, because you talked about really educating people a lot about these types of programs on social. Do you end up getting referrals that way from people that find your content online, specifically talking about first-time home buyer assistance? And, you know, how is that working for you?
Definitely YouTube. So what I did was I broke down the process of NACA and other programs and maybe about a good 20 to 25 YouTube videos. So we definitely get a lot from YouTube. You know, MG, the mortgage guy, who's a big player in the real estate field, I've done interviews for him, and people are just coming by. And one of the things that we do also is we post all of our closing videos to show people, like, this is the real thing. I'm not just talking about it. People are actually closing and purchase, you know, houses. And I think that played a big role as well.
I love that. You know, you're right. I don't see that many closing videos on social media for realtors. Now that I'm thinking about it, I see maybe like a closing photo sometimes, or you see, you know, maybe the picture of the home. But I love the idea of closing videos, because it's not just a, hey, I went to the seminar, they said I could do X, Y, or Z. And you're like, no, this is a real thing. This is what we do. And here's some testimonials, or not testimonials as much as just here's the results of what we can do. And also teaching financial literacy, I think, is never going to go out of style, because we are a consumer-based culture here in the West. We love to buy, and we are not taught, at least I wasn't really taught much about saving. Now I was able to watch my parents save, so I was able to do that just kind of from them. But was I taught any of that in school? I don't think so.
Not at all.
Or if I was, I didn't hear it. I wasn't listening. But and I think maybe there's all I've learned as an adult, there's all these life skills that I wish I would have learned in school, that they just wasn't part of the curriculum. And certainly I think financial literacy is becoming more popular in young education, but yes, it's still, I think, a thing that people don't know as much, because, you know, they're busy working, they're busy paying bills, raising families, you know, living life. And, you know, not everyone has a financial advisor. Not everyone has somebody that says, hey, this is all the money that you make per month. We're going to put some of it here. And, you know, most people don't have that kind of guidance. And so I think, you know, having somebody, like, I'm always looking for somebody to look at my finances and say, no, really, I am. And I'm looking for somebody to say, here's where you're spending. And I know you're not going to be budgeting for people, but giving them ideas about how they can improve and save is really, really helpful. I would pay somebody to go through. In fact, I used to pay somebody to go through all of my expenses and say, you know, you're spending a little too much money on dinners or whatever. But I had to find somebody in India, of all places, who is able to do that, because most people just don't have that here. And if you do have that, it can be quite expensive to hire those people. So I think what you're doing is really, really amazing because it serves a huge need. We want to, of course, get people out of debt, and we want to, you know, increase their savings so that they aren't making the property manager or the owner as wealthy as they could make, you know, themselves through home ownership. And also just the tax benefits alone, I think are something that most first-time homebuyers, unless they Googled it, might not be aware of. And boy, that is a nice thing to see on your first tax return after buying a home, seeing some of those nice deductions and expenses come out. So I am a huge fan. Now, are there programs also for investor or investment primary residence purchases?
Well, most people, they do want it to be your primary residence. I do get house hackers in every now and then. But again, purchase a 3 or 4 family home so that this way, you know, you can either live in a basement or you can live on the first floor and still take advantage of, you know, these low income, not even just so much low income programs, but, you know, just take advantage of the programs. I think my hardest sell is to the entrepreneurs. And I keep telling everyone, it doesn't matter what program you're with, you do have to claim more than $30,000 a year, you know, and again, that's my hardest sell. Like, listen, you can't purchase much if you don't make any money. You know, you can't show that you've made you gross $500,000, but then you only net 30.
So what Nadir is talking about, I'll just want to make sure this is clear because I know what she's talking about because I deal with this myself. But just in case someone else isn't understanding, what she's saying is for entrepreneurs, a lot of times they will have, for example, like an S corporation, the way their business is set up, which basically means they're an employee of their own company. And the reason why they do that is they can pay themselves a very low wage, even though they really own, like Nadir was saying, the company might make 500 grand and they might be the sole owner of the company, but according to the government, they're only making 20 grand a year, which is really a way, it's just a tax strategy. And it's great for the entrepreneur. It's not so great when he wants to buy a home. And I have to deal with a version of this myself. Whenever I refinance, I have to explain, I actually make a lot more. I pay myself a lot less because I just pay myself what IRS requires. But it is a lot lower than maybe what my true net worth is. So that's a really strong point. And that's also a good opportunity to educate entrepreneurs on here's how to get yourself ready to make the transition to home ownership, because you're right, that could work against you. Sorry for jumping in there. I just wanted
it's totally fine. I'm just glad that you understand. It's, you know, talking about this to so many different entrepreneurs, you know, some get it and they're like, I still don't want to do it, but I need a house, you know, but they want it at a lower interest rate. And unfortunately, yes, you can still get a house. There's bank statement loans and things like that. But if you do want to take advantage of lower interest rates and different programs, you would need to claim a little bit more.
Now, let's talk about inventory, because currently the inventory in your market, I imagine it's similar to Chicago in the respect that we don't have much inventory or as much as we would like. So is that a challenge for you right now with kind of the condition of the market?
Yes, there's definitely low inventory in New York, especially in the popular areas. We're still going at least like 20,000 of asking here in New York.
Wow. That's amazing. Do you ever have to get creative with finding non-listed properties? In other words, does it ever get to a point where the inventory is so low that the buyer's agent, you know, starts blanketing a neighborhood saying, hey, if you want to sell, reach out, we've got buyers. You know, is there any sort of creative ways other than just sort of, you know, waiting for something to hit the market in order to find more inventory?
Well, yes, we do that also. We have seminars for sellers, letting them know how much they can get for their home, hopefully, you know, prompting them to sell. But a lot of the things that we do too is we'll contact other agents who where we represented the buyer at. And hey, listen, do you have anything? Is anything coming out? You know, just shoot me over the address. I could get your blind offer tomorrow.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love all of this. What would you say? So we sort of talked about, you know, I talk to a lot of realtors and we hear, gosh, rates are a little higher than what I'd like them to be. And inventory is a little lower than I'd like them to be. I think we solved the rate, or at least the financing question, with some of these creative solutions. And, you know, we have a big change. Well, I don't know that it'll be, we're not sure how big of a change it will be, but if this NAR settlement goes through, which is expected to do in July, it changes buyer compensation in the way that it was done prior. It doesn't really change it that much. It just changes the way in which it works. I've always said buyers have been paying commissions the whole time. They didn't always know they were paying commissions because they weren't cutting a check, but right. They were still cutting an invisible check they didn't realize, but it was baked in to the price or the financing. Is this going to affect, you know, the possibility of buyers now having possibly to come out of pocket to compensate the agent, their agent? Does this change, you know, sort of what you're able to offer, or are you starting to make adjustments to account for people coming up with possibly more money now to pay the agent?
So actually, yes to all. So just like you mentioned, a lot of the, I do believe a lot of it will be baked in. So, you know, if the house is 550, 2% of the 550 will go on top of that, and hopefully it'll appraise. So these are now conversations that we have to have with the buyer. Like, hey, listen, we'll put the commission on top, but it will need to appraise for it. If by any chance it falls flat a little bit, you know, you'll definitely have to make up the difference. One of, and this is just my professional opinion, it's almost like I feel that, you know, some of the agents, they're definitely going to stop being an agent because no one really wants to fight for their commission.
Sure.
However, the ones that remain an agent, it's almost like, you know, to NARS is like, who do you want to get the money? Because some agents are not going to deliver the same service that they were delivering previously because they may or may not get paid.
Right.
You know, so that means that the attorneys now have to explain a lot more things than they were explaining. So now basic attorney fees, we're here in New York, can be anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000, will probably shoot up because now they're spending a lot more time working with one person than they were previously. So in most cases, the buyer is still coming out with the same fees. It's just who gets it? Do the agent get it or do the attorney get it?
You know, I didn't think about that. You're right. Attorney fees are definitely going to go up in attorney states. That makes all the sense in the world. And we are in one of those states here in Illinois. So I can appreciate that. And it's really not that's a great way to add to the conversation with the buyers, explaining how that works and what are the results of this. Oh boy, I love that. Boy, that's a great tip for our, it really is a great tip for our agents. And if you are a listener and you are concerned about how this might affect attorney fees, reach out to some real estate attorneys and ask them, hey, are you thinking about raising rates in the event where you're going to have to do some of my work sometimes?
Right.
And what, you know, how do I, you know, what do you think is going to happen? How do we continue to work together? And let's figure it out. And I think too, I'm curious to see if any lenders can come to the rescue here. And I'm wondering if banks, I don't know if this will be RESPA compliant or violate another sort of statute, but hopefully there'll be a way where a consumer who really just doesn't have the money to pay an agent can still somehow finance, you know, a commission or something that's fair to the consumer, but also fair to the agent who's doing a lot of work. So I'm hopeful that this will shake out, but I think you're right. I think there's a lot of agents. In fact, I know there's a lot of agents leaving the industry because we're seeing a lot of agents leave. We have a larger firm here. We have about 800 agents, and we're seeing an uptick in people not leaving to go to other firms, but literally leaving the industry. So for those of us that are not leaving the industry, I think it's a huge opportunity to really pick up additional market share and to be that education for the client who maybe never had a full service agent, never really understood what a good agent can really do. And this is an opportunity to say, hey, you know, the compensation model has changed, but your service is going to go way up because you're with me. And here's all the things I do. Here's what I charge. And we're going to try to get it out of the seller anyway. But in the event, you know, here's how I'm going to be compensated. I think it'll be uncomfortable for a while until agents start getting used to having those conversations. And again, I think there's an opportunity for some sort of either tech company or bank somebody to come to a solution here that can be accessible. So I'm very excited. I think this will all get solved. I don't think it will be the end of buyer representation, but it's certainly a change. I appreciate you. And you were saying that I was asking Adira beforehand, sort of, this is like the scariest question, I think. I said, have you started to see any 0% co-ops? Because that really is, it's scary to see that. And she goes, oh, I've seen that. Yeah, she says, I've seen that. And she's, we've started to make changes even before all of this came to light. Yes. So I think that was very, very smart, because I think the agents right now that aren't getting good direction from their brokerage about how to make that transition and what to do and what skills to start learning now so that you're prepared. I think a lot of those agents are freaking out and a lot of them are just going to leave the industry. So I think, again, this is another call to action for those listening. If your managing broker or your firm is not having real serious conversations right now to prep you about these upcoming changes and changes that are, quite frankly, are already here, maybe time to consider a different firm. And if you're in the New York City area and you service the boroughs or Long Island or the city, obviously Diamond Mind Real Estate would love the opportunity to chat with you, because you guys are really well poised for all of these changes. I mean, it's quite good timing in a sense. I know it's not like you're not brand new, of course. You've been doing this for 23 years, but this idea of having the right pivoting and having the right product at the right time is an unbelievable idea. So, and I also too, I wanted to ask back to the seminars, when you do seminars, I imagine too, whether they're in person or virtual, you're probably also partnering with other vendors who are helping, maybe pay for if there needs to be cost associated with renting rooms or providing refreshments or yes, whatever. This is also things where people go, gosh, I don't really have money to do webinars or seminars. It's like, well, you can get lenders and other attorneys.
Title. This market really helps everyone. Inspectors, my husband, he leads the construction division, contractors, so just reach out to anyone who is involved in your real estate lifestyle and just, hey, come in with me and do this webinar or seminar.
Let's talk about the book. So Dream Catch Hustle, How to Flawlessly Scale Your Business Without Missing a Step, available on Amazon. Link to that in the show notes. Tell us about the book. Why did you write it?
So many mistakes in business. I do the same thing that everyone else did. I'll start an LLC on Wednesday and by Sunday I'll be rich, right? But what I've learned is that when you are starting a business, it is best, and it sounds a little weird, but it is best to figure out what your end game will be so that this way you can structure your business properly and not what I like to call hustle backwards. Oftentimes people, they want this huge legacy, which is great. But, take me for example. One of my children, she does not want to do real estate. So it's like, who do I leave it to? You get what I'm saying? And, some people, they like being a solopreneur. So if you're a solopreneur, then that means that your branding is going to be impeccable and all the attention will be focused on you. One of the other mistakes that I've made is because I'm so visual that when people call the office, everyone wants to speak to me. And what I should have done was build Diamond Mind as the brand. Like every time you turn around, it's Diamond Mind, Diamond Mind, Diamond Mind, and not Nadira Taylor. So that this way people will feel comfortable when they call in and they're speaking to the director of sales. They're speaking to, my director of property management and so on and so on. Right now I have people be like, well, she's on a Zoom. Oh, the Zoom's going to be 8 hours. I'll call back in the ninth hour. And that was a mistake that I've made. So there's so many mistakes that I would like to teach other people. You know, you can definitely learn from other people's experiences. And again, finding out what your end game is probably one of the best things that you can do. So this way you can structure your business accordingly.
Yeah, the end game part is really important. I remember first learning about end game or an exit strategy from reading The E-Myth, The Entrepreneur Myth, which is a very famous book. A lot of entrepreneurs have read it. And I went, oh, that's right. Businesses, there should be an idea of what's going to happen when. So in other words, I'm going to build this up to a certain level and continue to run it, sell it. At some point, I'm not going to live forever. I probably should figure a succession plan or a sales plan. And you're right. We think so much about building a company, but we don't necessarily think about what's the company worth. Is there worth to the company? Right. Is there value if I step away? Can the company continue to earn income if I'm not the figurehead? And for those that are listening who have built up their own brand within their brokerage, of course, you're the brand and your brokerage, it's nice to have a nice name behind you. At the end of the day, though, it's you. And then when you transition to maybe start to building a team or maybe your own brokerage, you're running into what Nadira talked to is everybody wants you because they know you. And right. It does become a challenge to figure out how to politely introduce those clients to other team members. There's going to be ones you probably have to do yourself just because, you know, yes. Family, friend, or whatever. But it's important to think about how do I begin that process? And this book really helps you kind of figure out, you know, how to work backwards. Tell me a little bit more about what else people can learn in the book.
So there's actually tons and tons of great gems. One of them are debunking different myths when you are an entrepreneur. I mentioned one, which were the taxes, because you aren't able to grow your business and also apply for different loans. You know, we have people that pay people off the book, but we don't want another catastrophe to happen. But legally, so many people could not take advantage of PPP loans that they probably would have qualified for had they structured their business properly. You know, there's so many great things out there right now. Everyone's doing the SBA 7A loan, which can drive more revenue to your company, which turns around and give you more business. Like there's marketing that you have to pay for. And also just sitting down and determining what is it that you want for yourself first, and then what do you want for the business? Why did you start your business initially? Was it so that you can vacation anytime that you want to, so that you can purchase anytime that you want to? But whatever the reason why you started that business, don't lose focus of it, because then it's like you're on this hamster wheel and you're constantly trying to do more, which you should, but that's because you lost focus of why and how you started.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point, is we get so caught up in the day-to-day, we're not working on the business. As I said earlier, we're working in the business, and you have to work in the business, of course, to service the clients and keep the business running. And then you also have to work on efficiencies and how do I grow and scale? And the way that I'm going to grow and scale into a team or a brokerage or just a higher producing agent is probably not the same way I grew to this level. You know, you get to a level where you're like, okay, I need to I don't have enough time, or I don't have enough arms or whatever it might be. And now I need to get some additional assistance. Oh, but now I've got to pay somebody to do that, or I've got to hire teammates. And yes, it hits hard, and it's also going to probably hit at a time when you're the busiest you've ever been. So yes. It's really, really difficult to make that transition while you're in the middle of it. So you're absolutely right, is starting to formulate a plan, just like a financial literacy plan or a plan to get physically fit or whatever goals you have in life. It's really, really important to have sort of markers to shoot for along the way, so that you're like, okay, now I'm starting, because I cannot tell you how many people I've had on the show who get to $20, $30, $40 million in production. And they're like, I'm basically pulling my hair out, even though this is great. I'm so busy. And I can't just hire somebody and bring them on, because then I have to train them. I have to, you know, it's a lot of work. And now I have to build all these systems to teach other people, and I don't have the time to do that. So I think you're right. Building along the way is really important.
And write everything down. All of your keys to success, write it down in a format that if you hand it off to the person that you hire, they can pick it up and they can follow it. One of the things that I noticed too, and it sounds like tedious, you know, is like, I'm pretty much telling someone to exit the building, you know, open up the front door, make a right turn, go down the stairs. However, even though it is tedious, it will cost you so much less money and less time in the long run, because everything is structured and written out. So all of your keys to success, write it out in a format that if you just pass the torch on to someone else, they could pick it up and run with it, to free up more time for you and dedicate one day out of the week to where you answer the minimum amount of phone calls and you build your business. So everything that you wrote down, whether it's your 1 year goal, your 5 year goal, you are dedicated to and working on just that for that one day.
I think that's a great tip. And also, what I recommend is that is also a great place to think about social media content. So if you start writing down frequently asked questions that I get often, or maybe emails that come in from consumers, clients, especially if you're, you know, training a team or building a team, you're going to want, you know, some answers that we all agree upon as a team. Well, if you're getting the same answers over and over, or same questions over and over again, this is great time to say, hey, maybe I'll make a video about that. And I can push, this is just totally unrelated to what you said, but we can actually use a lot of those consumer questions as ways to create content on social media. That's a great place. You know, for example, you know, Nadira could easily do a video going, you know, rates are really high. I've got some other options that are really pretty cool that your own realtor might not know about, you know, and I would love to see that video, right? So those are things that, you know, you can use not only the things you do in your business, but you can also use it to promote your business in social media. So Nadira, this has been an incredible time. I really enjoyed having you on the show. I want to remind everybody, look, this, as we are all entrepreneurs, if we're realtors, and we want to really think about, yes, we are working in our business, we are servicing our clients, we are building that business, but are we also becoming more efficient and effective so that you aren't painting yourself into a corner where you're going to just be too busy to really live a great life because you hadn't maybe planned for some of the growth that you have. So this book is going to help give you a guidepost to start at the end, work backwards, and figure out how to continue to have a comfortable but exciting life as you build your business. So the book is Dream, Catch, Hustle, How to Flawlessly Scale Your Business Without Missing a Step, which again, I know I need for our business here. I'm going to read it because how often do I think about our end goal? Almost never. So I'm just as guilty as anyone, but I think this is a great opportunity, especially this year. We're probably all a little bit less busy than normal, which isn't a great thing, but a great opportunity to look to increase our skills, sharpen our tools. This is a time to read and go to seminars, and please pick up Dream, Catch, Hustle on Amazon. We'll have links to that on the show notes. If you are an agent in New York and you are looking for another firm, check out Diamond Mine RE.com. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. That is Nadira's firm, and she can talk to you and find out if you'd be a good option for their team and maybe you'd be a good fit together. Or if you're somebody that needs to refer business because you're not that familiar with these types of products and you're another agent, reach out to Nadira. She's the queen of this. Like, she will take all of those clients, and she also has people that she can refer back as well. So if you just want to build a relationship with her, for referrals, definitely reach out to her. Diamond Mine RE is the website, and the book again is Dream, Catch, Hustle. Nadira, thank you so much for being on our show. You're welcome. On behalf of our audience, I want to thank you. And on behalf of Nadira and I, we want to thank the audience for making it to the end. Please tell a friend about this episode. Guess what? Anyone who is struggling with buyers who are sitting on the fence, this is a great opportunity to send them this episode, send the agent this episode so they can start to learn about some of these creative solutions. Please do that. Pick up the book, and we will see everybody on the next episode. Thanks, Nadira.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. This was an exciting, exciting podcast. My adrenaline is still pumping.
Great.